What is going on, guys? In today's podcast, I am talking to landscape photographer David Thompson. Now, David does some absolutely incredible work. He's based out of Las Vegas, Nevada. And the reason why I'm bringing him on the podcast today is because I think he takes some absolutely incredible aerial and abstract and small image scenes, whatever you want to call them. He takes very, very, very great photos. There's a lot to learn from him in today's podcast. The interview was just so incredibly juicy. I've got a full page of notes here. I highly recommend if you guys are sitting at home, pull out a piece of paper, take some notes down, because David just has so much great advice to how you can become a better photographer, how you can take better scenes like that, and just a overview of his whole process. Such an incredibly useful podcast. Really excited you guys are here. All right. And here is my conversation with David Thompson. All right. Well, I'm really excited today to welcome David Thompson to the podcast. So incredibly excited to have you here. Will you start off by just telling us a little bit about yourself, just for our listeners that may or may not be familiar with your work?
First of all, Austin, I want to thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. And I'll just get started. I'll tell you a little bit about myself. My name is David Thompson. I live in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm a landscape photographer down here. I like to get out when I can, when time allows me to, you know, with a regular job and 15-year-old boy kind of keeps me busy around here. But I like getting out when I can. I love nature photography. I've been doing this for probably like 15 plus years now. And it's a hobby that I really enjoy and gives me time to just kind of relax and let me get out and do my thing. Yeah, it's in a nutshell, that's the basics about me. Real simple.
Yeah, love that answer. And definitely it is evident that you have been shooting for 15 years. There's just looking through your portfolio. Obviously I'd been following you on Instagram for a while, but before I did this interview, I went back and re-looked at a lot more of your stuff in your portfolio, and it's just incredible. It's really obvious to me that you are very good at, definitely very good at what you do, the photos that you take. I think in particular, the one thing that drew me to wanting to talk to you today is that I think, you are just one of the best when it comes to those really small scenes. A lot of photographers might call them abstracts. And I've always loved the way that you've been able to seemingly pick apart a larger scene and create beautiful images just from the finer details. That's something I'd really love to talk about today. Specifically when working with some more of your intimate scenes and details, will you walk me through the process of finding a composition like that and how you go about capturing it? Like just some of the ones you have where you're just like looking at just like the waves or something that's just really abstract that a normal person just wouldn't think to look at and shoot. How do you go about doing this, I guess?
That's actually a good question. So obviously when I first started, I was really into the wide scenes, and the grand landscape was the draw for me. As time went on and realizing that, you know, every time that you go out, the conditions have to favor, you know, obviously the subject that you're shooting, which is, you know, we want sky, we want great light and all that stuff, which is awesome. And I still love those scenes. But what I realized as I started to mature a little bit with my eye and, you know, composition and that kind of thing, I just realized that looking at those wide scenes was just not ideal for the time that I had to go out. So I started looking at smaller scenes. These smaller scenes was something that I've always enjoyed shooting and, you know, trying to find. The thing about those small scenes is it's cool because it's something that you can call your own, right? It's not absolutely like, it's not like, you know, they're just obvious. At times, sometimes they are, but I also like to say it's kind of one of those things that's kind of hidden in plain sight. So what I like to do is, and this really just with my photography in general, I don't necessarily have like a specific routine or thing that I like to do when I'm for those scenes. A lot of times it's, just what the conditions call for, right? So
absolutely.
I just like to let the conditions kind of dictate how I shoot. Sometimes I'll see this large scene and I go, what exactly do I want this scene to be about? And I started doing that a lot more instead of just, you know, like I said, with the grand landscape, it's, you know, pretty obvious of, you know, what's there, but let's break that down into smaller parts. What can we do to isolate our subject? What kind of textures and patterns can we find? And a lot of times you can't find that with shooting super wide. And then with that being said, you start going to, you know, through your lenses and, you know, your 200 millimeter plus. And again, as I matured, it started going from 200 millimeter, then it would go to 300 millimeter, then it would go to 400. And then, you know, at the longest focal length, you know, for me is 500 millimeter, but, you know, there's even times that I would like to go even, you know, longer than that. So again, I just let the landscape kind of dictate what I see and shoot, and then let the landscape, you know, tell me, hey, maybe you need to break this scene down a little bit more. What kind of patterns and textures are you seeing? Is there a lone tree out in the distance? What is, you know, the water movement doing? Is it, you know, repetitive patterns? Is it forming a certain kind of texture that may be interesting to the eye and that's different from what you're normally seeing? And that's kind of how I go about that. And a lot of times, Austin, it's just feeling, you know, what I feel, you know, at the time as well. So, you know, I guess it's very nuanced in some degree. But at the same time, you're taking the landscape in and breaking it down in a way that can kind of make sense a little bit more.
Yeah, that is just like such a fantastic answer. I was trying to take a few notes while you were just talking. Anyone who's listening to this, if you can go back and rewind that like 3 to 4 minute answer, there's just so much to unpack there. One of the biggest things I think that was interesting to me is how you mentioned that, of course, you started like the rest of us. We want to shoot landscapes because we love the wide angle and we love those crazy conditions. And it's just a fact of the matter that, especially if you're working that 9-to-5 job, like getting those crazy conditions where you're going outside and you're getting rainbows and crazy sunsets and crazy light, like it is so, so incredibly difficult to live and die by your wide angle lens. And it's just been really, really cool for me to just see how it's obvious when I look at your photos that like you may have gone out maybe looking for that wide angle composition, but you maybe didn't get the best light, but you've still got some photos that are just incredibly portfolio worthy. And it really resonated with me because I'm sure there's just a ton of people that are out there listening that they love shooting landscapes. They love traveling. They want to shoot that wide angle shot, but they might not get the best conditions. And the way to get those portfolio shots is to do exactly what you do, which is to find those smaller scenes and break things down. So that really resonated with me. The question that I had that I think would kind of bounce off this really well, and maybe you partially answered this a little bit. Do you ever go out specifically looking for those 500, 400 millimeter compositions, or are you mostly looking for the wide angle shots? And then when you're out there in the field, you don't get the great light, then is when you kind of start looking for those telephoto compositions.
It's a combination of both. One of the things with the long lens scene, sometimes it's like, how can I say this? I've gone out, say for instance, I've visited an area before and I had these ideas of maybe this wide scene that I wanted to shoot. And I get there and like you said, the additions weren't ideal. And then yes, I can switch to the long lens and maybe, you know, do something there. But a lot of times I'll end up just seeing an idea that I go, well, what happens if I come back and maybe if I, you know, depending on if I'm hiking or not, I can go, okay, you know, what happens if I hike over that way, you know, an extra mile and zoom in on that particular section there. I'll have to keep that in mind for the next time. So the next time I go, you know, I can put a lens on that. Sometimes, you know, as you mentioned, you know, you'll go have this particular idea for this wide scene and you go, oh, you know, I hope these conditions line up for this. And for me, and I think that's also one of my downfalls as well as a photographer, being that you get into this creative mindset and you have these expectations, if you will. And sometimes when those expectations don't develop, you can bounce to the alternative. With me, sometimes I don't stick with the original script and then bounce to the alternative maybe a little too early. Because we all know that when it comes to photography, you have to have patience.
Absolutely.
And I think that's, you know, for me, I have the patience, but I think also because I've been doing this for so long, sometimes I get impatient and can miss opportunities of ideas or, you know, a scene that I had in mind that I could have, you know, possibly done. So yeah, it kind of goes both ways. And, you know, again, the way I approach my photography, and again, I don't, you know, recommend this to, you know, people out there, but there's a lot of patience there. And I would tell, you know, your listeners, have that patience, you know, trust the process. And, you know, if it, stuff looks like it's going to go and it's good, the light is going to be good, you know, by all means, you know, wait it out. On the other hand, me, sometimes I don't have that patience and then I'll go and do something else, like put on the long lens. And yes, you know, I have been lucky and fortunate to come back with, you know, great images with that approach. So it does kind of go both ways. And again, like I said earlier, sometimes it's just a feeling, you know, you just have that intuition to say, hey, this doesn't look like it's going to work, so I'm going to try this instead. And most of the time it does work out for me, but there's been a lot of times where, you know, I went that route and didn't get anything. And, you know, that's kind of part of the, you know, part of the game there, that, you know, sometimes that, if you take that chance, you know, there's a good, you know, chance that you may not get anything. I have accepted failure with my work as well. Because the failure is part of the process. And if you don't accept failure, you're just not going to learn. So
absolutely.
That's so, you know, that's one of the things there too. I don't know if that, you know, answers that question, but, you know, more or less, yes, that's kind of, you know, where I'm at with that.
Yeah, that's perfect. One thing that I'm always telling my clients until I'm blue in the face is just that, you know, if you're out there and you're shooting a scene and the sky is blue and the light is not good, don't just sit there with your wide angle lens on and your tail between your legs. Throw on your telephoto lens and try new things. And it is so apparent. Your photography is like number one example of why you should do that, because you've got just so many great shots that, I mean, so many of them, there's just like two leaves on the ground and it just seems so simple, but so no one sees that. People just don't see that. So you've just always got to try. And so kind of flipping the subject slightly a little bit, when I look at your work, it's really obvious that your edits are very realistic. They're very well done. Do you have any particular tips, tricks, or advice for photographers and how they can find that editing style that's realistic? Or is there something that you think is a key to those realistic photos? Because I know there's a lot of people out there, they have like a style and maybe their photos are a little blue or they're a little warm or whatever. And there's a lot of people that want those realistic photos. What advice do you have for people that are trying to do that?
Austin, this is like a really simple and basic answer, more or less. As I said earlier, I let the light dictate what I shoot, my subjects. It's the same thing when it comes to the processing. Let the light dictate how you process the scene. I think a lot of artists get overly caught up with the processing, and rightfully so, because obviously the processing, you know, does help the image, but you have to have a composition to make that processing, you know, really go hand in hand along with the light. One of the things I say is that the light does not lie. So regardless of what your processing style is, if, you know, like you mentioned, you know, some people like to go cooler, some people like to go warmer, you know, some people like to go more saturated, all that is fine. But there, those type of colors, contrasts, atmosphere, the light doesn't lie. You can't make certain colors up, can't make certain kind of light, you know, work if it's not there. It's just going to look obvious to me. And I always say, regardless of how you process, the light doesn't lie. And the more you try to force it, the faker it's going to look. It's just not going to look natural. So, you know, you can, you know, if you're one of those people that like to shoot in backlit kind of light, we know that backlit scenes are going to have more contrast, right? Because there's actually light. Light creates contrast. So we know this scene is going to have more contrast. It's going to be maybe a little bit more saturated in certain areas because the light is hitting, you know, certain areas of the scene. So, you know, again, you know, it just has to make sense, you know, how the light, you know, is, you know, landing on the landscape. Another thing for me, like I like to shoot in low soft light, you know, or diffuse light, you know, perfect example. I'm looking outside right now and it's going to be an amazing sunset here in Vegas. And, you know, the sun has not, the sun is set, but it's windy, it's hazy outside, you know, backlit mountains right now. And, you know, there's a little detail back there, but there's low contrast, right? Because there's haze and dust and other particulates in, you know, in the atmosphere. But as I look 90 degrees away from the sun, you know, the colors are nice and soft and even, and, you know, there's plenty of color separation and a lot of depth into the scene. So stuff like that, when I'm in the field, you know, I'm very mindful of that. You know, I'll go, hey, yes, I'm going to, you know, get a nice sunset. I'm going to have some nice colors, but I'm also taking mental notes. Those mental notes, I'm also pre-visualizing for how I'm going to process, you know, just, you know, again, to kind of, you know, give that little, you know, taste of, you know, reality that was there. And, you know, I can put my little, you know, flare on it and maybe add a little bit more color, just, you know, so everything pops a little bit more. But, you know, again, you know, I'm just taking mental notes and, you know, seeing what the light is doing to the landscape. And, I think that's how you can get more of those natural looking scenes.
Yeah. That, I mean, once again, just an excellent, excellent answer. So much to unpack there. And, one thing I really liked that you said was that the light does not lie.
It doesn't lie.
That is so, so incredibly true. And it's just, the more that you talk here, the more it is apparent to me that your photography is just so good because you're always just, you're using the hand that is dealt to you, and you're always, you know exactly how to make whatever conditions are dealt to you look really nice. And I think that is just, that's something that is so difficult to do. And it just takes so much practice. And so I have so much respect for that.
Appreciate that. Thanks.
I did notice on one of your older Instagram posts, you talked about how you love the lack of scale in your images. And I was looking at some of your photos and there was just a few of them that I was literally just so, so confused on exactly what it was. And in most photos, that would be not good. But in your photos in particular, in these abstracts, it like helps the photo become that much more interesting. Can you speak to, just speak to this and what is it about the lack of scaling your images that you like, and how are you able to achieve that?
Austin's been doing his homework. I like that. I like that. So one of the things that early on when we get into photography, right? You know, they, one of the things they, you know, they try to tell us is, you know, when we're using our wide angle, you know, we can use a distortion to manipulate the landscape, right? So we can get closer to our subject and make it appear that it's larger than what it really is, right? Or, yep, you know, we go further back, it, you know, reduces, you know, the, you know, the size of it, you know, and vice versa, so on and so forth. But one of the things that I noticed, as again, as I matured as an artist, that when you start shooting these longer telephoto scenes and you're starting to go more abstract and you start dealing with these longer focal lengths, it's really hard to get a sense of scale because there's not other elements that can, you know, say, you know, that, you know, these dunes are this high, or, you know, you're, if you're doing aerial stuff, it's, you know, there's nothing there to say that you're 1200 feet in the air or, you know, 50 feet in the air. And the same thing goes with, like, you know, certain mud cracks or textures in the side of, you know, mountains, you know, and there's nothing there to give it a sense of scale. So as I started shooting more of these, that became the interesting part of the image, is not knowing how large what you're looking at, how large the subject is. And that made me study the details of the image a lot more. So now you're almost getting lost with, what is it? How big is it? You know, I wonder if that's at his feet, or is it high? Is it low? I don't know. But that's the stuff that's great, because it makes you keep on studying all the little details within the image to figure out, you know, what is it? You know, what exactly is this? And that kind of thing. So I think more, it's more perception more than anything. And I like that. I think that, you know, that's to me what makes really good abstract images, is, you know, not only the visual look of it and the flow of the image, but not having that scale or having that piece of, you know, whatever it is in there to, you know, identify, you know, the height or distance or, you know, whatever the case may be. Not having that makes for compelling imagery, in my opinion. So I always try to, you know, really focus on that when I'm composing and I'm in the field with, you know, scenes like that. And, you know, especially like with aerial. Aerial is the best because, you know, you can be 1500 feet shooting something from an airplane, you know, versus, you know, 300 feet, you know, doing something with the drone. But again, you know, you're shooting it, you're shooting the landscape in a way that does not reveal the horizon or, you know, hard lines. And, you know, with that, it eliminates any kind of sense of scale. So, you know, that's, you know, a thing that I really like to do in my images.
And do you think, I mean, as I'm thinking about this question, I honestly couldn't even answer this myself. So if you can't answer it, I totally understand. But what is the secret sauce to those abstract aerial images where you don't have a sense of scale? Because 9 times out of 10, when I look at a photo online, if I can't tell what it is, I'm just going to keep scrolling because I don't care and it's not interesting enough. But when you post an image and I can't tell what it is, there's some secret sauce that just keeps me looking and wondering. Do you have any idea what that, what's the secret sauce to that? It's a hard question.
Honestly, I don't know. I think that, you know, for me, and, you know, I can remember this is going back probably over a decade ago, when I first started seeing aerial images from Iceland. And I think the first two people that I saw, the first two people that I saw, and again, this is digital, so I probably should have said that earlier in my intro. I've almost been doing digital photography 15 years, but you know, I did some film, you know, prior to that. But anyway, I think the first images I saw was this guy from Greece, Emmanuel Koop. He was one of the first guys that I saw do Iceland aerial images, and Hans Strand. Yep. Those two guys by far were the first, and like I said, this is well over 10 years ago. This is before, like, you know, Iceland aerial river deltas was even like a thing. Like, it was like, those were the only two guys. And I'm sure there was maybe a couple of European guys that were doing it too, but not, you know, with the popularity where it is now. Uh-huh. And I remember specifically Emmanuel Koop. And I had the pleasure of meeting him and, you know, talking to him about this when he came to the States. And, you know, I told him, I was like, I find those images so interesting, you know, because, you know, at first time you're like, what is that? You don't, you know, you don't even know what that is. Like, you can't even like conceptualize what you're looking at in this image. And I think for me, again, as I, you know, got more mature with my work and got better at composition and that kind of thing, it comes down to visual flow. So when I'm shooting these aerial images, it's like with anything else that I'm doing with my photography, you know, first and foremost, you know, composition. The image has to have some type of, you know, flow to it. And that flow, whether it be in the grand landscape or, you know, these smaller scenes, there has to be some type of flow to make it interesting. So I think a combination of the actual flow of the image. Also, I'm taking elements in there. If you notice, and it's probably hard to tell on Instagram, but if you go to my website and look at some of the galleries, you know, these of the abstracts, is that I like to play off the contrast in colors, right? Yep. So I think the play off the contrast in colors, I think also draws you in. So, you know, but it's like hard contrast. So, you know, you got like a blue and black, or like a, you know, an orange and, you know, a darker brown, or
your together in harmony, you know, image is a perfect example of this. You've got the two fall colored leaves in the blue background. It's incredible.
Yeah. So I play a lot off of contrasting colors. One of the things that when I do some of my private workshops and stuff, you know, I always tell people when you're shooting these small scenes, the composition has to draw people in. It just has to. And there has to be a lot of detail there because it's such a small scene. So, you know, when it comes to post, the post processing, you know, you want to make sure that there's no distractions there. Like, anything that can distract the viewer or disrupt that visual flow, you have to fix it. And whether that's, you know, cloning it or, you know, spot healing, whatever it is, you know, it's a must, because it's what, you know, the viewer is looking at. And anytime your eye gets caught up within that flow, I think that it kind of takes away from, you know, from that a little bit. So, yeah, I would say it's probably a combination of like the actual visual flow, composition, the contrasting colors, you know, the different kinds of textures, rough and smooth, a lot of that stuff. So I think that may have something to do with, you know, why you can stay drawn into those scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes so much sense. And I mean, whatever the secret sauce truly is, you definitely have nailed it. Just incredible. Just looking at some of your, like your autumn watercolors where you've got just the reflection of the trees.
Yeah.
I mean, 99 out of 100 photographers would take a photo with the reflection and the trees. And you've just found a way to make the composition just that much more interesting, because you can just tell it's those little ripples in the water. And you really, rather than having the importance be on the trees, the importance is more on the color. And I think that is just incredible.
You know, what's really cool about that too. You know, you have this, like a sense of movement, you know what I mean? You have a sense of movement in the image. And, you know, it's cool because you can, and again, this it took me a while to figure this out, but it's cool because you can have elements within your scene, right? Or elements within the landscape that if you compose it in a certain way, it'll give a sense of movement. And that I think is really cool with dealing with some of those, you know, smaller scenes, like with sand dunes, for example. If you can isolate like a section of dunes and you really get in tight and, you know, you get your lines, you know, nice and organized within the composition, you can have a sense of movement. It's like a sense of flow, you know, in the scene. And again, that comes to how you're composing the scene, and obviously what the light is doing, right? So like if you have flat light on the dunes, you're not going to, there's no contrast there. It's just going to be even, and you're not going to get a sense of movement. You'll get some lines, which is cool, but there's not that sense of movement. So once you get that little bit of light and you get a nice, you can compose it in a way that these dunes are playing off of that light, you can get a sense of movement without, you know, like say the wind blowing, you know what I mean? So, you know, I always try to, that's a little bit more, I don't know, I guess advanced, if you will, you know, when you're in the field and stuff that you got to look for. But I always like that. I always like to have the, you know, try to compose scenes that have a sense of movement. I mean, you could do it with lone trees, trees that, like, you know, cottonwoods, for example. Cottonwoods were like a great example of that, because if you shoot these cottonwood trees in their bare state, you know, or when they have less leaves, you really get to see the tree structure of this cottonwood. And when you see this tree structure, if you start from the base of the tree, it just really has this sense of movement with these branches and scraggly arms, if you will, that are just reaching out, you know, grabbing something or reaching out into the scene or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, that has a sense of movement. I like that. I always like to, you know, try to incorporate that in my images if I can, you know, depending on, you know, what subject I'm shooting.
Yeah, that's great. I'm looking at more of your intimates and small scenes, and I can definitely see that. One thing that I like to ask at the end of every podcast, I don't want to take too much of your time here, but I like to ask if you have one piece of advice that you would give to landscape photographers to help them take better photos. This could be short, it could be small, it could be literally anything. If you just had one piece of advice that you could tell somebody that wanted to take better photos, what would that advice be?
You know, it's funny. This, you know, when I do some of these interviews, you know, I do get this question from time to time again, and it's funny, every year it seems like my answer changes up a little bit, but which is good, because I feel like that's showing the evolution of myself.
Absolutely.
Right? And the one thing that I would say that I probably wouldn't have said maybe, you know, 5 years ago or 10 years ago is, trust the process. Trust the process. You know, I will say, and I've said this before, it's a marathon. If you're trying to become proficient and great at what you do, it takes time.
Absolutely.
This is one of those, mediums where stuff does not just happen overnight. You know, it does take time to nurture and, you know, get good at what you do. You know, and within that process, you know, I mentioned it earlier, is accept your failure. You know, sometimes you have these high expectations of what you think you should come home with, or you know, that you should come back with a certain amount of images, and sometimes it's not realistic. It's great to set goals, but what I've learned is lowering my expectations, and again, just, you know, trusting the process and letting Mother Nature do what it does. You'll be a lot happier with your imagery, and you will learn to adapt to, you know, what's out there, and you will make compelling images, but, you know, you have to just trust the process and, you know, go with the flow and, you know, let things kind of do what they do.
Absolutely. Great advice. Trust the process, put in the time, and you're going to be creating images that you like, if you're willing to put in the years. That is so great. Sure. Thank you so incredibly much for joining me. To finish things off, will you just tell us where we can check out more of your work, where we can learn from you? Do you do workshops, online tutorials, whatever? Give us your couple minute sales pitch here.
Yeah, real simple. You can find me across all platforms at David Thompson Photography, Facebook, Instagram, my website. There's a couple other places, Flickr, Vero, 500px, but real simple, davidthompsonphotography.com. If you guys are interested in critique, processing, infield work, reach out to me. I do all of that. Again, David Thompson Photography, you know, across the board. The other only thing is, you know, stay tuned. I'm doing a major update to my website, so there's going to be a lot of new images coming. I would say probably in the next month and a half to 2 months, the website should be done. But this is going to be one of my, it will be the largest release of new work that I've done at one time. I think like literally every gallery that I have on my website will have new work. So, you know, if you follow me, just, you know, be on the lookout for that. Bunch of new stuff coming.
Yeah, I'm so incredibly excited to see that. And there's so much inspiration that you can find on David's website. Once again, David, thank you so incredibly much for joining us. I think there's so many helpful things in this podcast that people are just going to love. Rewatch this one twice, three times, four times, five times, as many times as you can, because there's so much good stuff. Thank you so much, David.
Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. And happy shooting to all you guys out there.
Wow, what an incredibly, incredibly useful podcast. I mean, there's just so many things that you could write down. I've got a page full of notes here of just stuff that I wrote down while he was talking. I mean, I'd highly suggest you guys do the same. If you do want to learn how to take better abstract or aerial images, or even just general landscape images, I would highly, highly recommend reaching out to David Thompson. Incredibly great guy, great photos. And I really think that you have a lot to learn from him. Even if you just want to go to his website and see some inspiration, he has some incredible images. Obviously, I've been following him on Instagram a while, but I haven't really dove deep into his work until this podcast. And man, it is just seriously so much good stuff. Alrighty, guys. Well, that'll do it for this week's podcast. Make sure to check below for all the links to more of David's work and his social media channels. And we will see you guys next time. Have a good one. Bye-bye.